Hello and welcome to the Dome Patrol United Podcast Network Premier League Euro 2020 special. Joining me this evening is not Ben. Ben got married on Saturday. Congratulations, Ben. So he is currently on his honeymoon somewhere in the UK, the Cotswolds, I think he's gone to. So Ben is unavailable this evening. So what I've done is I've lined up a super special guest who has been to all but one of the England games in the tournament, I think?
Correct. I missed that in the ballot on the first one.
Yeah, you missed the Croatia game. So joining me is a friend of the Dome Patrol and friend of the UK Saints, Mr. Mark Daly. Mark, how are you doing?
Pretty good. I think I've still got a hangover from Ben's wedding on Saturday night. But no, pretty good. In good frame of mind, obviously, with England winning and seeing a mate get married and be happy as Larry. So, yeah, really good.
And for those of you, weekend.
I mean, seriously, you couldn't really ask for any better, could you? I think there was a bunch of England fans that got caught in a hailstorm or a thunderstorm somewhere in the UK and that, but even that didn't seem to dampen their spirits. So, yeah. Brilliant.
No, well, you know, we'll come to preview in Wednesday. I don't think anybody's going to care what the weather is on Wednesday if England win.
No, but as my wife said, Mark, you're going to the football, it's going to rain. And it does look like it's going to rain.
Well, it doesn't matter as long as they win at the end of it. Mark, first thing, we'll quickly jump onto this topic as it started. You're a season ticket holder at West Ham. Government have announced today that there is no restrictions on football stadiums from July the 19th. So Premier League games are going to be full capacity. Good news.
Fantastic news. I did see the announcement today and it was a little bi-directional. On one hand saying everything's going to open up and that, and then on the other hand saying actually the numbers are not heading in the right direction. But I mean, it's great news for football fans, for the industry as a whole. And I guess from particularly a West Ham fan who could have gone to the last game, actually, but I chose not to go. Maybe my wife wasn't that keen for me to go. I hadn't had second vax or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, so people like myself who didn't get to see West Ham at all in what was a pretty good season for us. It's just going to be a great opportunity to see this team come together in the first game and give them the rousing welcome that they deserve, actually. But
I'd imagine it's going to be a sellout, isn't it? Your first game back at the home stadium after all this time.
Yeah. I mean, it always is, pretty much. So, particularly first game of the season always is.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a bit of good news. I mean, unfortunately, it hasn't come in time to make Wembley full for the next week or so. But there's still going to be 60,000 people in the stadium tomorrow on Wednesday for the big game. So just a quick one before we get into reviewing the quarterfinal games that took place at the weekend. What are your thoughts on the tournament as a whole so far? I mean, I'll go first and say I think it's been absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's been brilliant as well. Fantastic. Loads and loads of different ways to describe it. One thing I've really loved about the football is that there's been less prevalence for, you know, the acting, play acting and diving. I think the referees have done a pretty decent job. Not always, but pretty decent job in cracking down on that. For me, it ruins the game. You know, I love the game. Both you and I are NFL fans, so we're watching guys collide with each other at 50 miles an hour and get up as if nothing happened. And then watching you know, blatant cheating. So I think it's been magnificent. I also think, apart from the England-Scotland game where, you know, maybe Gareth was a little too reserved, there's been very little sort of Jose Mourinho parking the bus type activity and tactics. I think the games have generally been pretty open and flowing.
Yep.
Reasonable, pretty good levels of skill as well. Been some cracking goals. It's been some cracking misses.
Yeah.
I can't think of a game. Again, I was at the England-Scotland game where a lot of fans were very frustrated, particularly you know, at halftime when we're down having a quick pint. And but every other game that certainly I've seen, and I've seen most of them, it's just been enjoyable. And long may it continue, to be frank.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I was worried before the tournament started that the fatigue, it's been a long season for the players, the fatigue would mean that the quality of football wouldn't be very high. But on the contrary, like you said, there hasn't been any negative defensive football apart from England against Scotland, because I don't quite know what happened in that game. But, you know, the knockout, all the knockout games have been superb.
Yeah.
Excitement end to end. You know, the least exciting knockout game was England's on Saturday night, because they won it easily. All the others have been close and tense. I mean, the France and the Switzerland game and the Spain and the Croatia game, those two games on the same day, you know, six goals in one game and eight goals in the other. Just absolutely insane. And, you know, it's why we love football.
Yeah, and teams trying to score as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think that you mentioned fatigue. I think there's been a little, maybe to me, signs of fatigue in that I think sometimes the quality, particularly up front, hasn't been as deadly and been there as maybe you would expect. I mean, we've seen, you know, some teams miss goal after goal opportunity.
Spain.
You know, and is that tiredness or, yeah, exactly, Spain. You know, and they play a lot of football as well. Is that tiredness or nerves or what? Who knows, really? But I think from the fatigue perspective, I think maybe if there has been, it has been a cause of some of the openness, as you tend to see in a lot of defences, you see big holes.
Yeah.
See defenders struggling to get back. Now, whether that's tactic or some form of fatigue or just a strategy of the other teams, I don't know. But
has Gareth Southgate got it right with his defensive first outlook?
I think
it's proven to be. I think it's proven to be the right thing so far.
I think you can't argue with building from the back and having stability in defence. But with the sort of creativity that England has, you can afford to have players run forward from the mid. I mean, you know, I'm always going to talk about Declan Rice. You know, I sat there and watched him. I remember watching this movie once where people in a small town, as soon as they went to the outskirts of the perimeter of this town, they would start to disintegrate. So they're trapped in the town. It was like Declan Rice had a disintegration line on, you know, the halfway line in that game. It was just ridiculous. But you know, it's solid. You know, him and Phillips have created that sort of 1-2 in front of the last line of defence, which has looked fantastic. And they look like they enjoy playing with each other as well. And that's one of the things is, you know, I'm an Aussie. Obviously, you can tell from my accent and stuff, but you know, I'm a long-time England fan, home and away. And I believe that this is up there in terms of a spirit of squad, maybe than any squad that I've been following heavily or intensely myself. It just seems that they are committed to each other. I don't know what it's like when they're sitting around the dining room table, that old Man U Liverpool thing, but it doesn't seem to be there to me. And I think a lot of that endeavour is also driven forward a little bit because they're all playing for each other, not with each other. So,
I think this squad is as together as I've ever seen an England squad.
Yeah, it's cool. You just see it, you know, obviously we only see videos released by the news, probably that England or the FA want you to see. But, you know, that, I mean, that particularly, you know, these, well, they're all young, actually, but, you know, these newer guys to the squad seem to be hanging out together and just kicking balls around and having fun and doing stupid videos. And, yeah, it's great to see.
Yeah, it is really good to see. Like you said, both you and I have travelled with England, and you know, I started watching England home and away in 2005, and I finished in 2008. So I had the end of Sven-Goran Eriksson, and Steve McLaren, and Fabio Capello. Those were the three England managers that I saw. The players we had were superb, but the football we played was not.
No, I agree. And
it wasn't.
No, I think what Gareth's very lucky with in his squad is that there are a lot of players at pace. You know, that they can play at pace. They're willing to have a go as well. They're not always able to beat. You know, some of the frustrations I found with Raheem Sterling recently is that he hasn't, in some of the games, he failed to seem to be able to beat a player.
Yeah.
But, you know, he does threaten. He has pace and he can get in the box. So then your job is to figure out how to get him the ball, as well as Harry, of course. But when he's in those types of positions and hopefully can tuck him away. But, you know, I think what you have is a you know, touch wood, a defence that's tight, you know, a good five or six very highly performing players right now that basically can just bounce the ball out of defence and give it to these fast dudes and creative guys and just let them play with it in the other team's half.
Yeah.
That's not a bad tactic for me. Obviously you've got to figure out, you know, directions and being able to make the right cuts and stuff like that. So you're creating space for other players, all that sort of normal stuff that footballers learn how to do. But, you know, if you peel the core back, that solidity that Gareth's put together is good. It's just, you know, we have to bring the ball out over the halfway line. You know, I don't care if Declan Rice or Calvin Phillips stop at the 50-yard line, as long as they've already passed the ball through to somebody who's continuing to make an inroad or a run, you know. So
yeah, well, you saw more of that, and we might as well jump straight into the England game from Saturday night. I think you saw a more on the front for England on Saturday. Now, I don't know whether that was tactically or whether Ukraine were not that good. I think it's a combination of the two, to be honest.
Yeah,
but, 100%. You know, the early goal was key because it put them on the back, put Ukraine on the back foot immediately. And, you know, you talked about Sterling before, and you said he doesn't often beat a man. Mm. It came from him beating a man and playing a lovely pass through to Harry Kane.
And that's the beauty of what he can bring to the team. You know, and his consistency in doing that sometimes isn't always there, right? But we just got to hope that for the next two games, he's just flying. And he, all he has to do is beat one guy. And he's then going to create some space either for somebody else or for himself. And he just beat that one person. Or if he can't, you know, lay it off, that's creating rather than sort of sending it back where we saw in a, you know, particularly yes. one game, you know, where we're kind of just sending it back, restarting, and then sort of it just seemed to go
sideways. Sideways.
Yeah.
Into midfield, backwards, sideways. Into midfield, backwards, sideways. Like a never-ending triangle between the defenders and the midfielders.
But, exactly. You know, I had nightmare flashbacks to the days when we had Hayden Mullins at West Ham, the crab, we used to call him.
Because he had to pass sideways.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know.
Look at that Scotland game. There was real frustration with the fans. You know, I mean, there weren't that many fans there, really.
Yeah.
When you think about it. But it was real frustration. But they've sorted it out, I think. And, okay, so you know, had a poor game. In reality, it was a poor game. Scotland were probably the worst team that England's faced so far in this yep. tournament in terms of their own ability to score and creativity and stuff. And so, okay, we had a game. Wasn't that great? It's against the old enemy. Always going to have a few hiccups against them. Didn't lose. Moved on, and it appears that we've learned from it, which is great.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. So, you know, the first half was comfortable. Jadon Sancho missed a pretty good chance just before half time. But we went into half time looking really comfortable. And then came out in the second half, and within 30 seconds, did what we did in the World Cup, which was score from a set piece.
Yeah. And it's really like pulling out the dagger and, like, you know, starting to finish the job. That second goal, the first goal is great, obviously, but Ukraine are in the game. You know, you would imagine that they've had, you know, the old Harry Redknapp sort of throwing teacups at halftime type stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would imagine that, you know, they were prepared to really come out and have a go in that second half. And, you know, basically it was like it was a killer goal.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really swung the momentum right around, as I think, you know, we were talking before we started around, would you say it was an easy game or a boring game? I think you used the term boring game after that, if you're not an England fan.
Yeah.
Because it became reasonably comfortable after that.
Yeah. So, you know, good to see Harry Maguire score, because he missed a good chance against Germany from a header. Yeah. And then almost within, I think, 3 minutes of that, a Harry Kane header, great move down the left-hand side. That's our strength, is our left-hand side.
Yeah.
You know,
great.
Shaw, Sterling, and Mason Mount plays towards the left as well. They've got a nice little triangle going on there. Lovely cross from Shaw. And Kane did what all good centre-forwards do, and he head it down. If you head it down, The keeper's always going to struggle to save it, which he did. And, you know, at that point, the nerves are just gone completely. Mm. The game was over. And then, you know, England were in the position where they could start resting the players.
Yep.
Declan Rice was the first one to come off, which shows you how important he is to Gareth Southgate and the England team. He was the first one taken off with a yellow card. You still had Harry Maguire on the pitch, and you still had Calvin Phillips on the pitch on yellow cards. But Declan Rice was the first one to come off.
Yeah.
And his replacement scored the fourth goal.
Hey, when did the... brilliant too. When did the yellows get scrubbed?
That's it now, scrubbed. Excellent. Yeah, they're scrubbed now. So no players are on yellow cards now. So the only way you're going to miss the final is if you get sent off.
Yeah, okay, good. Let's hope that
didn't happen. Well, fingers crossed, yeah. But obviously the final goal, great corner from Mason Mount, and Jordan Henderson, after 62 England caps, got his first England goal. And, you know, I'm not Jordan Henderson's biggest fan because of who he plays for his club. You know, he's a Liverpool player. But he went bonkers when he scored, and you love to see it.
Oh, you got to be happy for him, right?
It's yeah, like, no, absolutely. Absolutely. For England, absolutely chuffed to bits for him. But, you know, yeah. it was great to see. And then, you know, for the last 20 minutes, it was just knock the ball around and, you know. But that's two quarterfinals in a row now. The World Cup quarterfinal against Sweden and this quarterfinal, where England have made it look easy in a knockout game with a load of pressure on. And that never used to happen. It was always tension, penalties, a red card, you know.
Stress.
But just, I mean, even the Germany game, I wasn't that worried. Okay, Germany had a couple of chances, but it was probably worse for you being in the stadium watching Thomas Muller going through one-on-one, because that was at the other end. It was at the far end for you, wasn't it? Did you think he'd scored?
I'm in the England section behind the goal, and you can just see him running, and you can just see that ball going in the net before it got even left his foot, really.
Yeah.
And then it was, I mean, we were all stunned. We're just like, what? And then it's like almost like celebrating a goal for England, that miss. And, you know, I just thought, this is it. I mean, I think we're going to. Well, we missed.
Even the commentator, so the BBC commentator, Steve Wilson, I think it was, when he did it, said, that never happens to England.
No, exactly.
And when he said that, you think, okay, is it? Oh yeah, is it? Yeah. This is it happening? You know, that in tournaments past would have waltzed around the keeper, tapped it into a net, won all, and gone and won the game on penalties or an extra time. But
yeah, and if he fell over and missed, it'd probably be the ref would give him a free kick or something like that. You know?
Something like that. but yeah, in the end, a very, very comfortable 4-0 win for England in a European Championship semi-final. Just an all-round brilliant performance, cracking result. Yeah, yep. That's nothing else to say about it, really, is there?
Nothing else to say. No, I think the only question you've got to ask out of the game now is everybody asked to do something, did it, pretty much. It was a good all-round performance by everyone who got on the pitch.
Sancho making his first appearance at the tournament, looked good, did his job. You know,
exactly.
Pickford made the saves when he needed to make them. There was not a bad performance, and even the players who came on did what they needed to do. It's just being an England fan, for as long as I've been an England fan, it's a weird old feeling.
Yeah,
it is a weird old feeling, but long may it continue. But we'll talk about the semi-finals in a bit. So the other semi-final on Saturday was the Czech Republic against Denmark. Denmark won 2-1. They were 2-0 up at half-time, and you thought it was going to be a bit of a walkover with the way they were playing. But to be fair to the Czech Republic, they stuck around, scored a goal in the second half, and actually made it quite an entertaining second half. And there was quite a few chances, a bit of end-to-end. I think the right team won, though.
I think so. I think the Czech Republic maybe didn't perform as well. The dominance of the midfield that I thought that they would probably have was negated by the Danes very well. Although, like Suchek, as an example, was influential in the game, you could see that they were taking him out of those dangerous situations where he's coming forward in the box and looking either... Because what he does, he creates space as well as scores goals from headers. So he can take two or three players with him, and that gives other players the opportunity to create space for themselves, get open and maybe get an opportunity. But I thought the Danes are very good defensively, even though, in the second half, they didn't play that well. And, maybe the Czech Republic could have got away with, going into extra time. But they played well. But the other thing about the Danes is they can score, and they can get the ball deep and wide and get those crosses in. And so I think, we've got to be careful ourselves. I don't want to go forward looking back, but, they create chances, and they can get the ball, really to the byline and cut it in. And they have players that work pretty hard. And I don't know, I haven't seen the Opta stats or whatever they are for, running. That we've seen the Premiership at least, but
they run a lot.
I think they work very hard, and that's why they're winning as well. Look, there's no bad teams. I think there's a lot of equalization of quality, and I think the guys were talking about it on Saturday night, maybe after the Czech Republic game. And they're talking about the quality of the so-called lesser nations now. But these guys are as fit as anybody else. They're all playing in good leagues if they're not playing at home. And they're playing in good teams. And the quality's there. And they know how to work hard. And I think the Danes work very hard. And to me, their quality was good. To me, I think their positional strategy, if you will, on Saturday, certainly in the first half, the Czech Republic couldn't deal with it. I think they, Suchek and Soufal, I always say West Ham players, but, you even saw like Soufal getting, fantastic write-ups and stuff.
Yeah.
And he is a quality player, but, they struggled, and certainly in the first half. But they were unlucky, and I think as you said, though, the Danes, you can't say that they didn't deserve the victory. They played very well.
Yeah, they did. They did. So we'll come to the semi.
It was very entertaining.
It was. It was another entertaining game. Yeah. It's we'll preview the semi final in a sec. We'll just go through the other two quarterfinals from Friday. The first one was Switzerland versus Spain. Switzerland were my surprise of the tournament, if I'm being honest with you. Yeah. Very, very hard to beat. And now Spain missed some chances. We touched on it earlier on that Spain are not good at putting the ball in the back of the net.
No.
But on penalty, once you get to penalties, it's a complete lottery, isn't it? It's a complete lottery once you get to penalties. And Spain won 3-1 on penalties. So, you know, Switzerland in the second round had the best penalty shootout probably I've ever seen. All of their penalties were brilliant. But in this game, the pressure must have got to them, and Spain triumphed 3-1. What did you make of this one?
You can see it in bloke's eyes. You know, it's like I've forgotten his name, the first penalty taker for Switzerland. You know, Lisa and I sitting there going, he's going to miss this. No way. Yeah. And you just see it. And, you know, you can look at blokes like Ronaldo and you look at their face and, you know, there's various reasons I don't like him, the wink, all that kind of stuff. But you can see that he's got this mental, I don't know.
He knows he's going to score.
Yeah, and he can picture he's going to score before he kicks the ball. That wasn't the case with most of the Swiss. I think they all
looked nervous,
panicked.
Yeah.
Mind you, some of the Spaniards didn't look so great either, and their pens weren't brilliant. But, you know, at the end of the day, they stuck the ball away. I think the Swiss themselves had opportunities throughout the game to maybe win and let themselves down. But it was the Spanish that dominated the game in terms of opportunities. And, you know, they just lack a Harry. If they had a Harry Kane, they'd be dangerous.
Almost unstoppable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they had somebody who could consistently score, they would be.
They just don't have none of the forwards they have in their team are.
They're not prolific.
No, and you get these gifts of loads of opportunities in the Spanish team because you know they do have creative players, and tactically they generally, at least midfield tactics, They're very good, but yeah, it was that final third. They went through.
Right, 10 got through. I think.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. But the Swiss were brave, you know, and you know, I guess as you know, people who generally will go for the underdogs, you know, it was disappointing really to see them lose, particularly when. You know, they even had the pen situation set up, you know, really to go through. But
fair play to them for getting where they did and knocking France off. You know, that's something for them to remember. And then the final quarterfinal we're going to discuss now was probably my favourite game out of the four from an entertainment perspective, and it's Belgium versus Italy.
Yeah,
it's just a shame that that game was played in a stadium that was only a quarter full.
Yeah,
because some of the football that was played in that game was unbelievable. Goals were good. The quality of football was amazing. I think 2-1 to Italy was probably the fair result on the balance of the chances. But Italy, I don't know what's happened to them in this tournament. It's very, very un-Italy-like watching them the way they are. I mean, they still defend like, you know, nobody's business. But going forward, they're quick, incisive, taking risks. And that's not something you associate with Italian football of the past.
No, generally not. I liken them a little bit to England in the set. It's there. They've got a lot of these guys are young players. From what I've read as well, there's a lot more diversity in the squad. In terms of teams, domestic teams as well. So, you know, they've had that sort of Milan, you know, Juve kind of thing going on for a few years as well. They all seem to love each other. And I think, again, you can maybe say they're all playing for each other as well. And some of these guys, you know, I know nothing about really, but they're good players. And, you know, that, the problem with Italy, the good problem for them, bad problem for everybody else, they're not a team like Spain that you have to give 20 chances to take five.
Not at all.
They can knock them away. And
if you go 1-0 down to Italy, you're in trouble.
Yeah, it'd be pretty deadly. And, you know, the thing is that as well, if you do go down 1-0 down to Italy in the past, you might be able to sort of have a go at them because they might start to sit back. But, you know, they play down both flanks as well as they can play through the middle. So they can bring the ball at you really from three directions.
Yeah.
And they move the ball quickly. You know, none of this old school, you know, stuff we used to watch on TV, you know, when they just pass the ball around the merry-go-round, you know, for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
No, it's, I'm not going to say it's almost English-like. They definitely play at pace, I think is the right term. And
they do.
They're good. And, you know, they've got a keeper who can make saves.
Yeah.
Obviously, probably the oldest people are in the team or in the defence.
Two centre-halves, 36 and 34.
Yeah, but they're playing well.
They are, they are.
They're keyed up. You know, it looks to me as well that they've been given this extra vitality or boost of energy by all these young kids.
Yeah.
You know, coming in and playing so well. And I can't look past them in the semi-final, and I think they're odds on favourites to go through and probably even win it at this point as well. But
yeah, I mean,
that's just a dark horse. If you look pre-tournament and that.
Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah. No, it is.
Sure, here in the UK, you could have got brilliant odds for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Before we move on to preview the semi-finals, let's just talk about Belgium really quickly. Everybody talks about England's golden generation.
Yeah.
Gerrard, Beckham, Lampard, Scholes, Rooney, Owen, Sol Campbell, Rio Ferdinand, John Terry, Ashley Cole, and the fact that they never won a tournament.
Yeah.
This Belgium team is very much like that now, I feel. De Bruyne, Hazard, Lukaku, Tielemans, Vertonghen, Vermaelen, Courtois. It's a really good team, Belgium. But there's just something
that's
stopping them making that next step up, which England always used to struggle with. Can I put my finger on it? No. I think the problem you've got with Belgium is their attacking players are all quite young, but their defenders, the three centre-halves that started the game, had a combined age of 101.
Yeah, but I mean, you could say the same thing about Italy.
Alderweireld. So. Yeah.
I think, to me, it feels a little bit Dutchy.
Is it the manager?
Well, I don't know. He's a great manager. Well, a lot of people think he is anyway. They got so much quality there. It's obnoxious. But, you know, so have some of them great teams that, like the Dutch. And it feels to me, you know, there was a lot of internal separation, another right word, you know.
They don't look like a close team.
Correct. And to me, it doesn't feel like they're playing for the guy next to him. They're just playing with the guy next to him.
Or for themselves.
So, yeah, maybe not for themselves. It's just like, you know, it's hard. Look, we've all played sport at some quality level, way, shape or form. It doesn't matter if you're just kicking the ball out Sunday league. You're playing because of your mates and you love them and you have a go because of them, or you're filling in and you're by yourself. You don't need these guys and you're just playing football, right? So
yeah,
I just feel like if they just had that extra love of each other kind of thing, who knows, maybe.
Yeah.
I think tactically, I don't know, that they don't seem to me to get the best out of De Bruyne somehow. I mean, to me, he's one of the great players of the world, you know, maybe in the top five.
Yeah.
What do I know? But he's just amazing. And we're lucky we get to see him play here for City, and you just see him just take over games, and it's just amazing. And he's at the back, and then he's at the front, then he's creating a goal, then he's kicking a goal.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem, the Belgian team right now doesn't feel like, you know, with Hazard there as well, that those two are able to create at 100%.
Too many cooks.
Perhaps. I mean, God, I wish West Ham had too many cooks like that. You know what I mean? But and then, so then does that go back to the manager? So, or is it just the players themselves? Lukaku, you know, he's an enigma as well. I mean, the dude is just a monster. I mean,
yeah.
What a physique. You know, we all kind of wish we had a physique like that, and the ability to run and jump and out muscle dudes, and he can score brilliant goals as well. I just figured, you know, it feels like if you've got Hazard and Lukaku, with Lukaku, you know, even peeling three players off with him, then Hazard should be, there should be plenty of room for him.
Yeah.
And then De Bruyne to follow up, you know.
It didn't seem to work.
Exactly. Yeah. So to me, you're talking about them being old at the back. I don't see them as leaking, you know, 1,000 goals a game or whatever. Mm. Now they gave goals away. We know that. But to me, they should have been more prolific up front, because all those guys have got loads and loads of skill. And it just didn't seem in that sort of, from the sort of midfield into the last third, that they really put it all together. And, you know, I know their fans are, you know, absolutely distraught, because they can see the, you know, the fact that they do have this golden age. And again, like England fans know, just not able to just do it, to pull it together.
Frustrating as a fan. Frustrating.
Yeah. So I think you summed it up. I think they are England sort of 8 years ago, 10 years ago, with all these fantastic footballers that really are sort of underproduced, certainly in this tournament, probably got to where we, at least we would expect them to, but I think most people thought that they'd probably be semi-final at least, and if not challenging for the final, and they sort of won games, but it wasn't, you know, they just didn't seem inspiring.
It was never convincing. It was never convincing.
Yeah, I mean, as a West Ham fan, and you know, and an England fan, they got players that I like to watch. Do you know? You know, all right, Hazard pisses me off, for various reasons. But you know, they got players I like to watch. Lukaku, I've always been a bit of a fan of Lukaku.
Yeah,
I like the way he buffets and, you know, runs around and works hard and kicks some pretty cool goals. I don't know, just I don't really recall myself getting off my chair for any of their games, really.
No. Even their game against Portugal in the second round, it was Portugal all over them, and they just defended. Yeah. They just defended for their lives.
Yeah.
So we have our semi-final lineup tomorrow night. So Tuesday, Spain versus Italy. Just off the top of your head, gut feeling, who wins the game?
Italy, I think. Unless Spain find a way to score, I think Spain can create some chances. But I think at the moment the Italians are unstoppable. For me, it's got to be Italy.
Yeah, I think Italy will win that game. That could go to penalties as well. I'd be surprised if that game finishes in 90 minutes.
I'm going to go
really
for something
surprised.
Like, I think the
do
Italians
you reckon?
Might, yeah, I think they might do it reasonably easy.
They're going to have a go at Spain, which no team in this tournament has done yet.
Yeah, you could be right. I just feel like there's a lot of confidence in the Italian squad right now, and I feel like the Spanish look like they were a bit relieved on what was it, Saturday night, whenever, Friday night. And yeah, I think they know that they were lucky to scrape through. So that might be a big motivator for them. And look, they're Spain. They can beat you. So
yeah. Yeah. If Spain turn up on the day, they could win that game easily. But I just think Italy are too strong at the back and they're going to be too powerful going forward. The pace and the way they play is just going to be too much for Spain. So yeah, I'm in agreement there. I think Italy are going to be on one side of the final. I'll ask you the same question for the England-Denmark game. Just off the top of your head, who wins the game?
I think this game could go to penalties. And I think
bloody hope not.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I don't want to get home too late. I'm gonna call at 9 o'clock the next day. It's and I'll probably have had a couple of pints. But I just, you know, look, it's normal. It's hard to ask an England fan how's England gonna go, right? You get to say, yeah, England gonna get a win, you know, just through blind loyalty or whatever, but I don't know. I see the Danes as being a good tight unit. I think they'll be relatively difficult to break down. I do like the fact that we've got pace at both left and right side, and we'll be testing them. Hopefully, getting in behind them. I feel like we're probably likely to be more on the front foot than the Danes, but you know they're a good counter-attack team. I feel like I don't want to moz it. We've defended so well, not been porous at all. Yeah, a couple of teams have maybe missed a chance here or there, but you know, on the whole, have been very tight defensively. I think that is in good stead because our left and right side defenders are good and are in good form. But I think with Phillips and Rice in there at the moment, I think these two players, I don't know that they've really come up against this type of defence. So we'll see. But we've got goals in us. So I think to me, it feels like if it is in 90 minutes, I feel like it's only going to be kind of 1-0, maybe 2-1 at the most. I don't think there's going to be a huge amount of goals. It's not going to be 6-0 or, you know, 4-3. I might be wrong.
I hope you are.
I don't. But I feel confident if it does go extra time or into pens in particular, that I think these kids are good penalty takers. I'd feel confident they would win a penalty shootout. But, yeah, I'd like to think at least that England's going to go through something like 1-0, 2-1, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been confident on England from the start of the tournament. I've said from the very beginning that I think England are going to win the tournament. I think England are going to win this game 2-0 on Wednesday night. Yeah. I think we're going to score one goal in the first half, and then with about 20 minutes to go, we'll score the second and win 2-0.
Good.
Yeah, I don't see any way with the way England are playing at the moment that Denmark can beat us. You know, tournament football is all about peaking at the right time. We started off slowly. You know, we were good against Croatia, poor against Scotland. We were better against the Czech Republic. We were better still against Germany. And then against Ukraine, it all seemed to click. And I just think, you know, tournaments are all about form and hitting form at the right time. And arguably, England are the form team in the tournament. No goals conceded.
Yeah.
You know, it's unheard of that a team goes this far into a tournament without conceding goals.
Yeah, so how do you think the team is going to line up as?
I would keep the same team that played against Ukraine. I think you start with that 11.
Yeah,
I think you start with that 11. Sancho did enough to keep his place on the right wing.
Yeah,
Mason Mount did okay. You know, everybody was talking up Phil Foden before the tournament. He's not really done much, but he's a good player to bring off the bench, as is Grealish. Kane's now confident, scoring goals. Sterling is the same. Luke Shaw on the left-hand side of the defence was good. Maybe Trippier in for Walker. Maybe.
Where are you going to do it? What might you do, say, at right back?
Yeah, maybe Trippier in for Walker because Walker had a bit of a dodgy game. but Walker's got the pace.
Yeah.
You know, he's got lightning pace. Yeah, I mean, the keeper will be Stones, Maguire, Pickford and Shaw will start. Phillips and Rice will start. I think Kane, Sterling and Mount will start. And I think it'll be Sancho and maybe Trippier instead of Walker. Maybe. I don't know. He might keep the same team. Yeah, I don't think you need to make many changes. Well, you don't need to make many changes because what he's got at the moment is working. So the good thing is we're both predicting an England-Italy final.
And, yeah, we are.
You know, look,
the atmosphere is going to be nuts as well on Wednesday. Every England fan I know who's going is not working past 12:30, let's just say. I will be, if my boss is listening, I'll probably leave it up too. But yeah, there's going to be, you know, a few lads and lasses. Certainly going to be a bit oiled. And 60,000 in there, there's going to be basically 55,000 England fans in there.
The noise is going to be pretty spectacular, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be nuts. I mean, it was pretty cracking for the last game at Wembley.
So when Harry Kane scored against Germany, the noises that came through the TV gave me goosebumps, you know, seeing the fans. What was that like in the stadium?
I was just incredible. I mean, you know, I've been obviously for, you know, when there's 90,000, 96,000 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but not to the quality or importance of this type of match. And so, you know, always a good atmosphere and sometimes not. But the sound was like in the stadium, it was like it was a full house. And people were, you know, everyone goes nuts when you score a goal, right? But, you know, you've probably seen the pictures, you know, Tango from Wednesday, you know, taking a tumble and just watching people falling over and, you know, not socially distancing. And, we had a bunch of, I'm in the England section. I was in block 110. I had the walls all around me. You know, so, you know, it's like 10 blokes all know each other and that. And just, you know, watching the euphoria of these Walsall fans going absolutely nuts and, you know, just about crying and stuff like that. Yeah, it was amazing. And I think it's a lot of people just letting it out from a lot of crap that's happened to them or to their friends or family or with their
jobs. It was a release, wasn't it? Yeah, it was a release.
Definitely. And, you know, probably the afters going, walking out of the stadium and heading up Wembley Way was, you know, just amazing. And people just, you know, smiling for once, you know, seeing a group of people. But the atmosphere was great. Interestingly enough, the England band was back for the first game. Now, I know. I'm not a big fan. Again, I'm a West Ham fan. You know, we're not into all that stuff and clappers and, you know, it's just not the West Ham way. But I think England missed a trick with the early games with the small crowd. I think because it was hard to get things going in those small crowds. It really was. And it was difficult to get a song going. I actually think that they should have had the band in for those games. You don't need that band when you got 60,000 England fans or even 45 or whatever it was. You don't need it for that. But when there was only sort of
8,000
or whatever, and 8,000 England fans officially at least, definitely they should have been there. I think it would have made a difference. But they'll be there, but you won't hear them.
No.
On Wednesday night.
Hopefully not.
There's an interesting thing as well is I think, you know, these tickets that would get sold back, here's my little theory, what UEFA is doing. So if you've got the Danes have handed 1,000 tickets back, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true, right? I think what they're doing, they convert those tickets into Cat 1 in Club Wembley in that and make you have to pay 300 euros or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, because I've been looking at Club Wembley, and I was in Club Wembley for the Czech Republic game because that's the only ticket I got through the ballot, through the England fans ballot. And fine, I loved it, right? But Club Wembley, it was a person, a seat, a person, a seat, almost right around.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at all these geezers around me and that going, these geezers ain't Club Wembley people. It's same as me. They're normally down behind the goals. But you know, it's all they could get. And I think some of those tickets were converted.
Yeah. So they can get more money, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we'll see. But
look, you're in the stadium, Mark. And as I've said to you before, every single game that you've been to, I'm insanely jealous.
Yeah. Look, I'm very lucky. I actually had all tickets guaranteed before, you know, the COVID thing. And then UEFA took, well, England, but UEFA made England take all our tickets off us. So, you know, I'd spent the last 2 years, I guess. When did we get them? 2019. Comfortably knowing that I was going to go to every England game, whether it was at Dublin or whatever. And then this is happening and I'm still thinking, doesn't matter, I can still go to every game and then take a ticket. So, yeah, I missed out. But my mate who I go with, Ian, he missed out on the first two games. So,
So question, one last question for you then. Not wanting to tempt fate, have you already got a ticket for the final?
So what happens with the England fans tickets is that you only get allocated a ticket for every game, but I'm because I was a ticket holder in the previously, I will have one.
Yeah. So you will have a ticket for the final, right? Okay, well, that's all I'm going to say on that. I'm not going to jinx or put any more mockers on it at all.
As well.
Yeah, that's definitely right. Touch wood on that one.
Look, I hope I have to spend 300 euro or whatever.
Yeah, I hope you do too. I hope you do too. Yeah, right, is there anything else that you want to add before we wrap this up?
No, I just love the Dome Patrol, obviously. It's been cool to come on as a special guest. I hope I haven't been too boring.
No, not at all, mate. Not at all. You're better than Ben. That's all there is. That's all that we need to know about.
He's the consummate professional.
Consummate professional. Right. Yeah, I can think of a C word to describe Ben. It isn't consummate. Right. Thank you, Mark. No, honestly, Mark, stepping in late notice, very, very much appreciated. We will obviously, when the Premier League podcast kicks off, when the season starts, we'll me and Ben will have you on to discuss all things Premier League when we've got a few games in and some things to discuss. So, Mark, thank you very much for stepping in today. It's been good.
You're welcome.
Cool. So that's all the show we have for you right now. We want to thank our loyal listeners for downloading each week and telling all of your friends about the Dome Patrol United Network, where you only have to subscribe to one feed to receive multiple podcasts, including the 2-point conversion instant reaction show, which isn't that far away now. The NFL season's getting closer. The Dome Patrol podcast, the BS and Beer Saints podcast, the Pelican Plunge, the Premier League podcast that you're listening to now, Taking the Over with Billy Gunn, and the Tiger's Den with Scott. You can follow each show on Twitter at Dome Patrol PCast, at Dome Patrol UK, at BS and Beer Media, at Taking the Over, and at Tiger_podcast. Follow us for live streams on Facebook, just search for Dome Patrol Podcast. And if you want to listen to the old fashioned way, go to domepatrolpodcast.com. Say goodbye, Mark.
Goodbye, Mark.
got to hold and give, but do it at the right time.